If a warning light suddenly shines on your car's dashboard, you check the owner's manual to see what you should do. Well, it's too bad bodies don't come with such warning lights. Not yet, anyway. And no owner's manual either. So we have to be aware of the little twinges and noises and discomforts, and only then can we begin to address them. Today's guest helps people fix issues with their bodies, particularly the skeleton and muscles. Doran Long is a Grants Pass physical therapist and the author of Your Body Book, a head-to-toe handbook for health. It's good to have you here in the studio, Doran. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Jeffrey.
So you are an orthopedic manual physical therapist. More terms other than just physical therapist. What does that mean?
Well, I like to stick with working with necks and backs and shoulders. So anything that has to do with muscles, bones, and joints, I choose to do that because those are people who generally are injured. They're not necessarily sick, and they're usually not dying either. So it's an orthopedic injury. I can work with them hands-on, which is the orthopedic manual part. And I can pretty much guarantee that I can at least help them get better. I can help them improve motion, decrease pain, and become better educated in how to take care of themselves.
Been in practice, I understand, for more than 30 years now.
More than 30 years. Been in Grants Pass, 25. Have worked a lot of on-call, so I've actually worked in Ashland, Medford, Grants Pass, and beyond, but mostly Grants Pass in Southern Oregon area now.
What attracted you to this line of work in the first place?
I love working with people, no question. I just love working with people. I like to know kind of what makes people tick, and I think the human body is fascinating. I never get bored. I'm always intrigued with what we can do to help keep it healthy or get it back to health. Fascinating. Science is interesting, math is interesting, but the body's fascinating. People are fascinating.
Well, there's some science involved here. Is there math as well?
Math and physics is part of the prerequisites. We take anatomy, physiology. We do work with cadavers in our training as well. So
really?
A little bit of everything. Physics comes in handy. We're supposed to understand all of that.
The range of motion stuff and how things work together.
Exactly.
Okay. Elasticity of connective tissue, things like that?
The whole, yes.
Really?
And that's all the physical part. But then there's also the emotional and the mental and the spiritual part. And I can't separate it. Oh, as the years go by, I find that we're so intimately related that one thing just relates to the other. Example, sometimes people ask me if their physical pain, like the tension in their neck, is because of mental stress or physical stress, and I don't really care. You know, if it's mental stress, they're going to tense up physically. If it's physical stress, they're going to be in pain and have stiffness anyway. So either way, my job's just to try to decrease their pain, fear, anxiety, worry.
There's a perception in some quarters that that when you get physical therapy, you feel worse at first, and then you feel better. How do you respond to that?
I don't like that. That whole no pain, no gain is a bunch of nonsense. There's a few exceptions possibly, but generally, as an orthopedic manual therapist, I come on, I work with hands-on, I do a lot of osteopathic techniques, which are very gentle, and a lot of education. So I really guide people on some basic rules, like, you know, if there's increased motion and decreased pain, you're doing fine. If you have increased pain, then stop, unless for some reason, you know, we're like with a frozen shoulder, sometimes we do need to really stretch people and it is uncomfortable. But even afterwards, people then have better motion, less pain, and they're actually feeling better. So if we listen to the body, and that's a big emphasis on this book, is to try to help people have that almost common sense of what to do and what not to do so they know whether they're doing the right thing. Example would be the standing back bends. If you have been sitting for a while and your back's kind of stiff and sore and you stand up and you do a couple back bends and afterwards it feels better, then your body's saying, thank you, that's exactly what I needed. Now, if for some reason you get sharp shooting pain down your leg, then stop, don't do that. So big emphasis, common sense, listen to your body, it'll tell you.
I'm smiling only because I'm remembering the old joke, doctor, doctor, it hurts when I do this, and the doctor says, don't do this.
I tell people that. They come in and they're like, it hurts when I do this. You know, hurts when I'm on my phone all day long. Well, don't do that. Get a headset. You know, there's things that you can do to eliminate. And I have to be honest, as a physical therapist, I have a little kink in my own neck and I'm like, now, okay, what am I doing? Is it my pillow? Is it that I'm tilting my head to the left? I mean, I'm doing something and I have to figure it out. So we're kind of like Sherlock Holmes sometimes.
In this day and age of computers, are you finding more things that people are coming to you that they have never felt before? And I ask this only because when you were talking about the thing, you know, wondering what you're doing, video editing years ago and realizing that you place your neck in kind of a funny position as you stare at the two monitors. There are lots of things we're doing to ourselves now we didn't used to do.
Yes, we sit way too much in this country. We do use the mouse, and it does. It takes some detective work. I had a young man who was great, except that he kept coming back in with the same shoulder pain over and over again. We finally figured out he was a little sports car with the stick shift, and he was having way too much fun shifting gears. So it takes a lot. Yes, it can be the computer, the mouse. We do sit too much. Our chairs, our bed, our mattress, our pillows, there's just a lot of things, and it takes a lot of brainstorming sometimes to try to figure out what it is that's causing the pain and dysfunction, and then what we're going to do about it.
So after 30-some-odd years of practicing physical therapy, what got you to write a book to finally put this together in a nice spiral binder that's easy to flop open and stay open?
Thank you. That was the whole idea. Good question. My writing is illegible. I have been scribbling notes for 33 years, and I know people, they take the little scribbles, and they take my little stick figures, and they go home, and it probably gets tossed in the trash, and it's literally illegible. So I literally came home every day for a year, wrote down what I typed in the computer, what I was actually telling people. And it took about a year to realize that I was repeating the same things. Ice is nice and heat is neat. And if it hurts more, stop. And then it took another year or so to actually get the illustrations done. A local illustrator created Skelly, and he shows you how to do the exercises throughout the book. So it took a couple of years. But basically, this is what I share with people on a daily basis.
You'll hear more about Skelly and the structure of the book when we come back. Dorianne Long is talking about Your Body Book, on the market for 3 years now. She's a physical therapist in Grants Pass. More on the book, more on the body when we come back to the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 30. Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Dorianne Long is a physical therapist practicing in Grants Pass. She wrote something like an owner's manual for the human body several years ago. It's called Your Body Book. Because of her particular specialty, it focuses mostly on the proper care of the skeleton. There's even a character called Skelly explaining things. There are phone calls from the original broadcast in 2014, but we can't take any new phone calls or emails today. So how is the book organized, just in general? I mean, you want people to be able to flip into it. It is a spiral-bound book. It does open and stay open, so that you can leave stuff sitting on a table while you're busy stretching or doing some analysis of yourself.
It was very carefully designed that way, to have it a spiral, to have it lay open. So the first section is literally head to toe. It starts with the head and the neck and the shoulders, and it works on down the body. And you can read that and get a basic idea of the vocabulary, very basic, like the neck has 7 neck vertebrae, and a vertebrae is the actual neck bone. So there's some basic vocabulary and basic information. I love working with shoulders, so there's quite a bit of information on shoulders and the types of problems that can happen. A little bit of information about when we're in a car accident and get a whiplash, and then it just works on down, back injuries, knees, ankles. The second part of the book is basic vocabulary, like what's the difference between a sprain and a strain, and what are those little crunchy noises in our kneecaps when we're going up and down stairs, so that you can go to the book and say, look up your knee and have some idea what might be going on, and that may be helpful when you go and talk to your doctor or other healthcare providers. And the third section is basic health information, like drink water, eat well, get enough sleep, and to be aware of how stress and anxiety and fear can increase our pain. When something happens, we tend to get very anxious about it, and then that just makes it worse. And then the fourth section is actually the exercise part of the book, where you can just flip it open. And personally, I'll do anything to stay in a hot shower. So in the shower in the morning, I do my jaw exercises. I can do my neck and my shoulder and even some of the back exercises. And then the other ones I do when I'm standing and brushing my teeth, small squats and standing back bends. So it's quick, it's easy, it's designed to be a user-friendly guide and a go-to guide. So if you have a particular problem, you can go right to that page. I did put a glossary in the back of the book. So again, if you need to know that the collarbone is actually called a clavicle, you can pick up some of that basic medical vocabulary as well.
Interesting to hear about your stretching routine. I do mine with the morning newspaper, and sometimes the ones on the floor, the cat gets on my chest.
There you go.
You get company when you do some
of these.
That's
good therapy. It's good heat therapy, too.
It's got that going, too, and it's fuzzy. Explain the opening of the book. We get the old the spiritual, Dem Bones.
Oh, I cannot go through a day without Dem Bones. You know, the head bones connect to the neck bones connected to, and it's so true. If I'm working, for example, someone comes in and they have a headache, it's probably a tension headache. It's probably starting from tight muscles in the back of the head, but their jaw could be affected as well. Their head could be on crooked. Their neck muscles are probably tight. They could have stress, and then it goes back to working on the computer too long and having a funny posture. So I literally work with people either head to toe. Sometimes I go from toe to head. Somebody could come in gimping, and it might be because of their back or hip or knee or foot, and it could be their big toes got an actual problem. So I really check people head to toe. And I also check left to right and front to back. For example, you could have pain on your right side of your back, but it could be the left side that's actually got the problem. So I check, and I think every physical therapist should check people literally head to toe. I think it's really important that we look at the whole person and at the whole problem and not just zero in on just the area that hurts, because where you hurt isn't necessarily where the problem is.
Athletes, professional athletes, often talk about mechanics. You know, a pitcher who's got a blister on his finger may change his throwing motion enough to blow out his elbow. I have to believe that happens to a much lesser degree with us as well, that if we get a bunion or something on our toes and start walking strangely, it's going to affect knees and hips and onward.
Yes. And if you go to the website, on one of my pages, there's the guy Skelly is a little illustration. And if people will take their elbows at their side, have their elbows bent, and then take their hands away from their stomach, and this is illustrated on the webpage, that's going to be stretching a shoulder muscle that's called the subscapularis. If that muscle's tight, the shoulder's off, and people often have elbow pain, including those professional baseball players where they're being treated for their elbow because their elbow hurts. Well, it's not their elbow, it's their shoulder that's actually tight. It's an example, again, where we have to find where the problem is, fix that mechanically, and then the pains will go away.
Do you work with a fair amount of referred pain in physical therapy where you're getting it from? You just mentioned two examples.
Yes.
So it sounds like it's something you frequently see.
Referred pain, is there a lot? Trigger points is a big thing, and I just barely mentioned trigger points, but you can Google trigger points on the internet and it pops up. It's amazing. You can have pins and needles and tingling and numbness, and you're thinking, oh, I'm having a stroke or a heart attack or, you know, a pinched nerve, and it could just be a trigger point. And once you find it, acupressure it, then the symptoms go away.
Let us take some calls. We have Leslie and Ashland on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with physical therapist Doran Long. Her book is Your Body Book. Leslie, go ahead.
Hi. I was interested about this idea that, you know, our body is giving us messages, and I'm having all of this numbness in my hand recently, and you just started to mention numbness. So I'm wondering, typically, what is that message?
Which part of which fingers are numb, or is it the whole hand?
It's the whole hand with an emphasis on the thumb and the first finger, or the first two fingers.
Okay, great. So there's a couple things. As a physical therapist, exactly what we were talking about, head to toe, I would first start by checking your neck range of motion. And if your neck range of motion would change the numbness in your hand, it's possible you would have some kind of a neck problem. I would check same thing. Check your shoulder range of motion, your elbow, and all down to your wrist. The first thing that comes to mind is you could have some carpal tunnel syndrome, which would actually be compression of nerves at your wrist. But that could be contributed to a neck and a shoulder problem. So you have to kind of check the whole chain from the neck all the way down.
All right.
Cool. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for the call, Leslie. Appreciate it. Other calls are welcome here at the Jefferson Exchange for Doran Long, the author of Your Body Book. Phone numbers are 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. And our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. We were talking a little bit about starting at the head. This is a head-to-toe book. And then there's a tennis ball trick for the neck. What's that about?
Well, I use tennis balls a lot. A tennis ball and a sock is a great way to do some trigger point down the spine or off into the shoulder blade. And sometimes two tennis balls right at the base of the skull, and you can actually lay on them or lean up against the wall. And that gives you, we call it in the base of the head, the suboccipital release. And so it's a way to kind of do a hurt-so-good massage. If you put pressure on the base of your spine, whether you use your finger or the tennis balls, and it feels kind of a hurt-so-good, and I know that feels that's a weird word, but you'll know it. It's like, ow, that's it. It hurts. But then after 30 seconds, maybe a minute, it's like, wow, I feel better and my headache is actually shrinking. And that's one of the key things to the body. If your pain or symptoms shrink, you're on the right path. So if you have a tension headache that starts at the base of your skull, goes all the way up and over the top, that's a bad sign. If it starts to shrink, comes back to the base of the skull, then you're on the right path. So anytime the pain shrinks, the better.
There's a real cause and effect from what you're saying then in physical therapy, where it's, if it feels good, keep doing it. If it doesn't feel good, stop.
Yes. That's, you know, it's common sense, but people always don't have that. Another example is when we sit, our knees get stiff and we first stand up, and ideally we should be doing little knee bends just to kind of get the knees lubricated and then start walking. And if you're walking, you're feeling pretty good and your body loosens up, keep going. If you start to limp and it gets worse and worse, then stop. The body's telling you stop.
Oh, so there's no walk it off in this realm.
Listen to the body. It'll tell you.
All right. So you mentioned working your jaw exercises, and you do have a section here on TMJ. So, I mean, why is it we tend to store tension there?
Well, we just automatically clench teeth. We tend to clench our teeth and shrug our shoulders, and that's just probably been that way since we were caveman days. If you catch yourself clenching your teeth or you wake up in the morning and your jaws are tight, it's nice to do some TMJ rotation exercises. And again, it can help with jaw pain. It relaxes. It can help with headache. We're not supposed to be clenching our teeth ever, except maybe when we're actually chewing something. So the basic TMJ exercise is to put the tongue on the roof of your mouth and to gently open and close. Pain-free, we call it crepitation-free, meaning no snap, crackle, pop, grinds, and symmetrically. It's very, very gentle.
I was going to ask about crepitation. The first time I've heard that term, but that is the actual technical term for the popping sound?
Yeah, snap, crackle, pop, grind, any of those things. And sometimes we can figure out what those noises are, like the knuckle popping. We think it's just fluid moving in the joint, no big deal. But grinding is grinding. Like when kneecaps grind, you're actually grinding your cartilage off the bone, and that's not a really good thing to do.
It's strange that we're still talking about things like the knuckle popping and not being sure. After all this time.
Exactly. When I was in therapy school in whatever it was, late 70s, a chiropractor came in and they didn't understand it then, and I don't think they've done it now. It's because they can't see it. We think it's fluid moving in the joint. It might be a suction that's breaking. We just don't know. But one thing I think they're pretty sure of is that you get a little endorphin release when your knuckles pop like that, which is a little natural high. So I think people do it because it feels good. And some bodies pop more than others, and I just don't worry. I don't like when people do it all the time. But it's not a harmful thing.
I probably haven't heard this in about 25 years, but are you not supposed to crack your knuckles because they'll make them big or something
like
we heard when we were kids?
Yeah, nonsense. I still hear that, but yeah.
All right, let's take another call. We have Don and Eugene on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Doran Long, the author of Your Body Book.
Oh, good morning. I have a suggestion that has worked for me. It's similar to your tennis ball therapy. I had the occasion to have a 2-inch wooden ball. I had made something for a friend with I bought some wooden 2-inch balls. I attached one to a dowel about 2 feet long, and I used it in a door jamb to apply acupressure to various places on my back. You can really get a lot of good pressure with that wooden ball, and you can place it exactly where it needs to be. It's a little more aggressive than a tennis ball, but I'm telling you, it really does work, and it's not patented, so you can use it in your neck. Let's pray for regenerative cartilage developments, you know,
microfracturing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Don, that's great. You're right. Tennis balls, racquetballs, golf balls, the wooden ball is a great idea. You can buy things that are like, they've got little knobby things on the end of a curved wand, that kind of stuff. Yes, whatever works best with you, as long as it's in that hurt so good category. I love foam rolls. Those are those like water noodle styrofoam tubes. Sometimes people lay on them. They can use them for massage as well. People stand on them for balance. I'm a big fan of therapy balls as well, that people can either sit on, balance, do some stretches. So yes, a variety of tools. And that's a big, my push is, you know, find what we have at home that's comfortable, inexpensive, things that you can do that save you time and money and lots of doctor visits and x-rays and MRIs.
So you can do like Don did and just figure out your own toolbox.
Yes.
In essence.
Oh, toolbox is the perfect term. You bet.
So on to the spine then, because we haven't really gotten there yet. What are DDD and DJD?
So DDD stands for degenerative disc disease. It sounds horrible. It's not a disease. What it means is that as we get older, our discs get thinner, and that's why we get shorter. I personally believe the more water we drink, the healthier our disc will be, and that there are things we can do to keep it healthy. It's not a problem. It doesn't necessarily cause pain. DJD stands for degenerative joint disease, which also sounds horrible. It's not. It's not really a disease. It's just the wear and tear that happens as our body gets older. And it's a lot of it's genetic. I look at people's fingers, and if the first two joints have the kind of lumpy, bumpy extra bone, then I know that they have some degenerative joint disease, and it's probably inherited from their ancestors. Not necessarily painful, not a problem. Now, if somebody has pain along the big knuckles, then I am more concerned that it might be rheumatoid arthritis or something else. But either DJD, DDD sounds bad, not a problem. It's just the bony changes that happen as we get older.
As a physical therapist, you don't actually do a diagnosis, right? It's an assessment. Is that the terminology?
Exactly. Legally, we assess and we do not diagnose. Yep. And I like the way we physical therapists work because we gather our data. We check the range of motion. We check the muscles. We look at the posture, the mechanics, that kind of stuff. And then we add our summary. Doctors tend to be trained more as ruling out. You come in with a cough. They're like, is it a cold or is it the flu? And then they kind of check. That's the way they're trained to think. And I think we gather our data and then go from there.
By the time people see you for physical therapy, though, if they've been to doctors and they've gotten MRIs and scans and all sorts of pictures of their joints and stuff, and often really don't know what's going on still?
Correct. There's a couple things. One is we do have direct access as physical therapists, so people can come to us directly, and then we send an evaluation to the physician. So sometimes I think it's better to start with us PTs, and then we communicate with the doctor, especially as needed, if you do need to get the x-rays and MRI. X-rays generally, even the doctors will say they're probably negative. They're looking for broken bones and tumors. Most of us don't have broken bones and tumors. To move on to a CAT scan or MRI, if you're considering surgery, it's a several $1,000 investment. So if we can help, and honestly, most things go away with time anyway. So we're just trying to speed things up.
Doran Long, she's the author of Your Body Book, a physical therapist practicing in Grants Pass. Here's Grumpy John in Grants Pass. Welcome to The Exchange.
Thanks, Jeffrey. I am curious as to why we haven't developed a solution that you could just squirt into the joints and then using the MRI and lasers harden it back up so that you have rebuilt the knee. It seems to me that this is well within our technology, and I'm just very irritated because I've got a dog with dysplasia, and I would really like to just fill back in that joint, zap it, it's rebuilt, done. There you go, folks. I'd like to patent it, but I don't have the wherewithal to do it, and I don't have the knowledge of how to accomplish it. But I don't know why that isn't just done.
Two questions for you, Grumpy John. You're talking about cartilage, and do you have a German Shepherd?
I do.
All right, in both cases. All right, thanks. Let's get a response from Doran.
Wow, that's an interesting idea. Good luck. What I can tell you is they are doing a variety of things. Synvisc is one of those injections they do. I think the odds are about 50-50 that it's going to help or not. In my experience, I found that they try something new and exciting and be very careful because they're going to try it and then they're going to wait about 5 years to see what happens to those guinea pig people, and it doesn't always work. Years ago, they were trying some TMJ, Gore-Tex disc replacement, and it was a nightmare, and an absolute nightmare. And they've done some things like they were doing Gore-Tex ligament replacements on knees. So it's not easy. It's not always the right thing to do. Honestly, time and gentle movements. For example, just small knee bends. Motion kind of is the lotion, if I can quote Carl Sniffen. He's a running coach out of the Grants Pass area. You know, gentle motion, then it gets the synovial fluid moving, which then helps your body to regenerate. And it's amazing how our body will heal, especially with orthopedic problems. They really do their best. The body does an amazing job of healing with time. There's a few parts of the body that won't heal itself. Sometimes rotator cuff tears, they don't heal. But even then, if we're not in pain, we can figure out another way to function with it. So time It's the answer sometimes.
It seems to mean, as I get older, that the key to staying in motion is to stay in motion.
Yes. You know,
it's an object at rest tends to stay at rest. So it's really a case of inertia, isn't it?
Yes, I love that. I love that ad on TV. I really do. But yes, we just have to keep moving. And I mean, I have 90-some-year-old patients that are not necessarily in pain. And I have 90-some-year-olds that are doing Pilates and yoga and things that I've never done at any age. And they're still doing it. Now, genetics, again, is a big factor. But yes, we can keep on moving. It's amazing.
So we don't have to really lose range of motion in all our joints. I mean, are we still capable of staying very flexible if we just stretch ourselves?
Yes. It's a good question. Flexibility is very genetic. And so there are some people, there are, again, 80, 90-year-olds that could still do the splits probably. So the flexibility you're born with, but we can keep that as long as we keep moving. The example I like to use is people say every time a cat gets up, they just immediately stretch. And if every time we got up and we stretched and kept our motion, and whether people do Tai Chi or yoga or whatever, anything, but we've got to keep moving and keep our motion. If we keep our motion, keep our strength and balance and function, then we should be in tip-top shape.
Here's another fan. Tim in Eureka says another great guest. He says, my right elbow hurts. I changed to a stand-up desk and rollerball mouse, but it hurts when I paddle my kayak. I've heard it is due to my tricep. Any ideas?
I don't know about the tricep or not. It's the same kind of thing. We'd have to check the range of motion. It could be a variety of things. It could be just too many repetitions or too much strength. First thing that comes to mind would be kayaking would just be give it a break every once in a while, every, you know, couple minutes, just let it breathe and maybe change the range of motion. I like to use TheraBand and a dowel to kind of replicate the kayaking position and try to figure it out. But that's kind of an interesting question.
So you do assess the mechanics then as well.
Yes.
What people
yeah.
do is like, so what are you doing when this happens?
Yep. We'll simulate to the best of our ability. Now, I've done it with the dowel and the TheraBand, which is great. It doesn't quite replicate the thickness of the water and the rocks you run into and things like that. So I'm not 100%, but I do the best I can.
Doran Long is a physical therapist from Grants Pass and the author of Your Body Book. You'll hear more of what she has to say and what she wrote about when we come back to The Exchange in a minute 20. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Doran Long by now has spent 36 years practicing physical therapy, most of those in Grants Pass. She knows the body and shares the knowledge in Your Body Book out 3 years ago. The interview dates from that time, so we can't take any new phone calls or emails today, please. I know you mentioned you tend to work a lot with the neck, shoulders, back, that sort of thing. I didn't zero in specifically on the neck with my own perception that the neck seems to be a real zone of misery for a lot of people.
Oh, it's tricky. Heads are like 10 to 12 pounds. That's a lot of weight. So you take this bowling ball and you're trying to set it on top of these little tiny neck bones that aren't necessarily lined up right because we have lousy posture. And some of those neck muscles, particularly at the suboccipital where the head bone connects to the neck bone, they're only like an inch long. So it's kind of like balancing this bowling ball on top of your fingertips. It's very easy for it to get out of alignment. And with the body, anything that's too tight, too loose, or weak or painful, you're going to be in dysfunction. And with the neck, I work, again, all the way around. People come in with tension headaches or their upper trap across their shoulders is tight, but they could have tight muscles coming down the front of their neck as well. They could have tight chest muscles that's kind of pulling them forward. And posture is so critical. If your shoulders are forward and your head's forward and you have what we call a gooseneck, then something's in dysfunction and you'll probably be in pain.
The big technical term, crick in the neck. What's generally going on there? And boy, why does it seem to affect everything else? It just makes it tense up all around, it seems.
You bet. The crick in the neck is probably a pinch, like in the facet joint, the little joint that connects the neck bones together. It happens to all of us. You know, we sleep funny, or maybe we get in a position, or you fall asleep like in an airplane, and then those little joints probably get stuck. And it's kind of like a drawer that's just not quite able to track the way it used to. And you're right. As soon as there's pain, then the muscles go into spasm. And as soon as they have spasm, then you're back in pain. And it just becomes this nightmare of cycle. If we can hands-on gently unpinch that pinch, then everything relaxes immediately. And there's some nice way. Again, I do a lot of osteopathic techniques, strain, counter-strain, muscle energy techniques that helps. It's very gentle, very pain-free, but powerful that gets that kink out. And it's, again, in the book, it talks about positional release or strain, counter-strain. Sometimes you can make it go away yourself. You can turn it off.
Well, you really get a feel for the head bone connected to the neck bone connected to the backbone if you have issues with your back, because as I've noticed, if you get a spasm in your middle back, generally it's going to change your posture enough to mess up your lower back as well.
Yep. Yeah.
All that kind of stuff. We have a question here from Michael in Mendocino, didn't stay on the line, wants to know what you, Doran, think about prolotherapy.
Oh, you know, good now. Prolotherapy's been out, I don't know, 30-plus years, and when they first started, it was a nightmare, and they stopped it, and then it came back again, and they tried it, and it was a nightmare again. Now they're good. In the Grants Pass, Southern Oregon area, there's like Dr. Tomaszewski here in Ashland and Dr. Osborne in Medford, and there's others that are doing prolotherapy. What I tell people is if prolotherapy or any other kind of injections, if you have the right doctor doing it who really knows what he's doing, if it's the right thing to do, generally prolotherapy is done for hypermobile ligaments, joints that move too much, and if they get the right spot and you follow the instructions, it can be very successful. I'm hearing really good things about prolotherapy now, including physical therapists who have had prolotherapy done to themselves, and they said it works, so I'm a believer now.
Does it stand for something, prolotherapy?
It's kind of, the simplistic thing is it's kind of a sugar water injection, and the injection, the sugar water kind of causes an inflammation, which causes scar tissue, and then that helps that hypermobile ligament to become less elastic. So it's kind of creating scar tissue, and it can work. Hmm. And again, it works well. And they use it on a variety of down the spine, sometimes knees and ankles. So if it's the right thing to do, it can be very helpful.
But successful in the long run, but irritation in the short run, it sounds like.
Exactly.
Got it. Let's take a call from Ann in Eureka. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Doran Long, the author of Your Body Book.
Oh, hi. Yes. What about torn meniscus? I tore my meniscus about 5 years ago, and the only option seems to be surgery, which I've avoided. But is there any other therapy besides surgery to clear out a meniscus that's been torn?
That's such a good question. Meniscus is kind of like a rotator cuff tear where they say once it's torn, and that the body doesn't really heal it. I think I've had my own meniscal tear, and it took me a year or two, and my knee slowly, ever so slowly, got better, and I'm, you know, functional. I'm not 100% perfect, but I'm functional with it. The good news is they can do a meniscal repair arthroscopically, so it's got those three little incisions. The surgeon goes in and usually kind of shaves off the part that's torn, and then hopefully you're good to go again. It wouldn't hurt a bit, though, to have a physical therapist evaluate, because, again, checking the back, the pelvis alignment, your hip, your knee range of motion all the way down to your foot, just to make sure that there's not something else that's going along with it. Because as Jeffrey said, sometimes when one thing goes into dysfunction, then lots of other things go as well. An example, there might be a quick fix. Sometimes we can do a little rotation of the knee, which unpinches that meniscus, and sometimes a little tape or a knee brace can be very helpful. And as long as it's not pinching and it's not giving way with you, then it's something you could be living with.
Can the way you move hurt you? I mean, can you be walking around all your life wondering why you're generally sore and go to a physical therapist like yourself and get told you need to walk a different way? Would it ever quite come to that?
Sometimes. You know, there are people that walk like a penguin. That's probably the easiest thing to describe. They're kind of waddling down, and often that's because it's a bad habit. They got into the habit of limping or weak muscles or something. And we can often change how they're walking, change the mechanics, and then, yes, that can take away pain and dysfunction.
Okay, further on into the spine here, what is TOS?
Thoracic outlet syndrome, which goes back to Leslie, you had a question about your hands going numb, and I'm glad we came there. Sometimes we get very tight in the front of our chest, just below the collarbone. The pectoralis major and minor muscles are tight, and if those muscles get tight, then they can squeeze the nerves. So when people wake up with numbness in their hands in the morning, it's usually because they've been sleeping in a fetal position. Their wrists are all curled up, their elbows, and then their shoulders as well. So sleeping with a pillow and kind of opening up that chest area can be helpful. Now, it can get more complicated with thoracic outlet syndrome. Sometimes it's a first rib. Sometimes there's more nerves being compressed for a variety of reasons. But we start with assessment. We do a lot of chest stretching, try to open that space up and make the symptoms go away. But that's a perfect example of that referral symptoms. We have to really try to figure out where it's coming from, what the problem is. in order to be able to treat it.
Referred pain from somewhere else. It's actually, the problem's actually in your shoulder, but you're feeling it in your elbow, et cetera.
Yeah.
I want to, before we get too far away from the rotator cuff, I want to pause there for a second because people who pay attention to baseball hear about this a lot. What actually is that, and why is it that it doesn't seem to regenerate once messed up?
Good question. The rotator cuff muscles, there's actually four muscles that come across the top of the shoulder, and they're either pulling the hand away from the tummy, pulling it, or lifting the arm. The problem is where the rotator cuff tendons, and this is where it's great to Google because you can Google, the tendons are like tissue paper thin, like wet tissue paper thin, and they have very limited strength, and then they're running between two bones that are only about a quarter inch space, so it's easy to get them pinched, and if you just keep either fall on it and actually rip it in two or just overuse it, you can literally tear it. And when it's tissue paper thin, it's just, it can't repair itself. The surgeons are pretty good, though. They can go back in. It's a lot of rehab, and a lot of that surgery is fairly extensive, but it can be fixed, which is nice.
Let us take another call. We have Ruth in Reading on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Doran Long, the author of Your Body Book.
Thank you very much. I am wondering, is there a connection between Lyme disease and physical therapy?
Well, you're talking to a physical therapist that had Lyme disease, so
wow.
Yes.
Jackpot.
Yes, there can be. It's not easy. I had Lyme's disease in 99, supposedly was treated with antibiotics, and unfortunately you never know whether it's gone or not. When I try to keep up with it myself, it's possible the Lyme's disease can cause acute arthritic pain. It can also cause a variety of other things. I wish I had a magic answer for you. I don't on that.
And so, Ruth, have you had a bunch of PT to help restore some range of motion?
No, it's not me. It's my son, and they took him even to, he's in down in Southern California. Mm-hmm. But anyway, they took him up to San Francisco, and they just dismissed it as ALS and told him to go home.
ALS, really?
Yes, and I just don't understand it. Yeah. I can't accept it.
I try to keep track. I don't have a person to refer you to, but there are certainly some Lyme experts across the country, especially on the East Coast, because there's so much more Lyme's disease than there is. There is that Western blot test, and there may be another test as well to try to find it. It's not easy. It gets very complicated very fast because there's the Lyme's disease and then there's more bacteria and parasitic and things like that that I can't, it's beyond my medical expertise.
Mm-hmm. Ruth, and thanks for sharing and best of luck with your son. Let's go to Terry in Cottage Grove. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Doran Long.
Hi. I'm in my mid-70s and I have spinal stenosis. I've had a laminectomy. I do medical Qigong, which I've done for years. But when I walk, I have terrible cramping in the T-band, and I can only walk for like a minute or so at a time. I have to rest. I was wondering if there's any comment on that.
All right. Thanks for that, Terry.
I'm so sorry. You know, the stenosis goes back to just, it's one of those things that happens as we get older. There's decreased space because of the discs are disintegrating, and then the bones are closer together, and so you start getting a smaller space. The nerves get compressed. What you're doing is great. Have you tried water therapy? And then the other thing would be to maybe go into more of a pelvic tilt to try to open the spaces up literally so the nerves don't get compressed. The other thing we do if people can't walk is they think about a bicycle, like a recumbent bike, because it kind of puts you in that spine. It puts the spine in that position where there's less pinch.
There is surgery in severe cases, I understand, to scrape out the area so you can
they try,
relieve some
but
of the pressure. Yeah, it was pretty horrible when my mother had it.
When there's the entire spine, they can't really do everything. You'd like to say, oh, it's just a Roto-Rooter. We'll go in and open everything up, but it's really not that easy, especially with men.
All right. Let's take it from Connie and Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Doran Long.
Good morning. One thing I would like to bring up is something that happened to me. I have one leg that's considerably longer than the other, by about 22 millimeters, and I had knee problems as a kid, back problems, and no one bothered to measure. And so I didn't find out the specifics of this until I went to a chiropractor who did one of those standing x-rays. So I wondered, here is a case where the person's manifesting symptoms, but no one, including the pediatricians or anyone along the way, is noticing something very basic, such as a discrepancy in leg length.
All right. Thanks for the perspective, Connie.
That's a great thing to do. And yes, leg lengths are amazing. We're all off. You know, none of us are perfect. But if it's more than a quarter inch, and I routinely check people's leg length, because you're right, it has a huge difference from the waist all the way down and actually all the way up to the TMJ, because it's literally head to toe. So I always check people's back, their pelvic alignment, their leg lengths. I check, this again is osteopathic, check for inflares and outflares and upslips and things like that, because sometimes it's the actual leg that's different lengths, and sometimes it's just that our pelvis is out of alignment, and that's very fixable. Chiropractors are pretty good about checking for this. Physical therapists should be. Ideally, doctors are as well. And just a note, the orthopedic surgeons are getting much better when you've had a total hip, total knee at checking leg lengths. Before, they used to say, ah, it's close enough. Well, now it's not. Now they're really getting good at, because they realize just how important that is.
So up to a quarter inch is okay. More than that becomes an issue.
Yeah. And I usually start, if it is like a quarter inch, I'll just put like a shoe, have somebody put a shoe insert in and start with that. And if that corrects it, that's great. And the other big thing besides leg length is for men to take their wallets out of their back pocket. Those two things sometimes can just, it's amazing what those two things can do just to take care of pain and dysfunction.
That's right, guys. You'll have to start carrying a bag after all. Ruth checked back in and wants to know if you can rename the two tests that you suggested for her son with Lyme disease.
The Western blot, BLOT, is the one I'm most familiar with, and I believe there's another one out there as well. And the best that they can do, my understanding, is they can say, yep, you either have it or had it. There's no test that I know of that says that it's gone. And the only treatment that I'm aware of is long-term antibiotics, and long-term I mean like 6+ months, and that has its own complications as well. So there's no easy answer with those.
Yeah, Lyme disease is an ugly thing and has so many different effects on the body. Lumbar spine and disc injuries you get into in this book, and I can relate mm-hmm. to some of this. Why are they so prevalent, not so prevalent, I guess, after age 40?
That's a really good question. So when people are young, we'll say 20 to 40, the disc, the low back disc is very kind of like a jelly donut. The inside is the nucleus. It's kind of jelly-like. The outside is, you know, fairly sponge-like, which is kind of trivial. When you sleep at night, we all expand about an inch because our discs are swelling up. They're like sponges. And then as the day goes on, we kind of shrink by that inch. And you'll notice that because when you get in the car in the morning, your rear view mirror is up. And then at the end of the day, your rear view mirror is down. By age 40, our lovely little squishy discs are starting to degenerate a little bit. And so the nucleus is not as sponge-like, and we just start to kind of shrink. So the odds of a herniated disc is generally a man 20 to 40 years old, generally doing some kind of mechanical lifting or jumping off the back of a pickup truck. 40 and on, it tends to be more that degenerative disc disease, degenerative joint disease. It's more the thinning of the disc and not so much of the disc herniation.
All right. You saw me chuckle a second ago. Mm-hmm. It's because, yes, I was lifting and jumping off the back of a pickup truck this weekend. So far, so good. But, boy, we learned so much today. I think we'll have you back at some point to talk more about the workings mm-hmm. of the body, because we barely seem to get into the book. It's called Your Body Book, a head-to-toe handbook for health, written by Doran Long, a physical therapist practicing in Grants Pass. Doran, thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
It's been a real pleasure. Thank you.